you, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm going to head up here because I can just see you a bit better from here as well. But it's really good to be with you, so thank you for the invitation. And it's something we all need to, I think, consider, this discipline of rest. But I'm going to start by flicking back to the past a little bit, okay? I'm going to go back lots of years to the 1950s. I was born in the 50s, and my children find it hard to believe. No TV, no radio, no telephone in our house, just a wind-up gramophone and a great big stereogram. And it was a really big event in the 1960s when we got our first black and white television. Yep, remember those days? And that could have been any family, I think, in the early 60s. It was dead easy because there were only three channels. It wasn't hard to choose what to watch. And as children, we liked ITV because it had adverts. Isn't that ridiculous? But we liked the adverts because they were catchy. You could sing along to them. I could sing them all to you now. I'm not going to. But this one particularly, I reckon everybody knows. A Mars a day helps you work, rest, and play. It would also make you very fat, but that's a by the way. And not the best health advice in the world, but actually, it had something quite profound in it. Our life is made up of different compartments, and work, rest and play are essential. They're necessary components if we're going to have a balanced life. So this pie chart, which one for you would be the yellow one? Don't say anything, just think. Work, rest, play. Which one would be the yellow one? I reckon children are the play experts. Here are my two little grandsons, and they are playing. They're playing at being grown-ups at a wedding, okay? I thought it was brilliant. In their little world, they're pretending to be grown-ups. I love listening in to children playing. The next slide, they're playing again, but I bet you don't know what they're doing. It looks like just having a paddle. No, that's actually Batman and Robin. What they've got in their hand is very high-tech equipment. They're going to save the world. And it was such an engrossed, important game. Actually, after half an hour, we had to tell them to hurry and get on with it because their feet were going wrinkly. But it was deeply involved play. When did you last lose yourself playing? We need to learn from the children. We need to learn from the teenagers. Because as this next slide shows, teenagers are the experts at rest. Yeah? They discover, and it's true, there's not a lot in life that you can't do horizontally. Okay, it's a fact. You can do all your homework horizontally. You can apply for jobs. You can do anything horizontal, really. And they can sleep for England, and they need to. Sometimes when we get cross with them or grumpy with them, it's only because we're jealous that actually, wouldn't it be lovely to be able to do that too? Their rest wedge, perhaps, is better than a lot of ours. Because as adults, we tend to see another aspect of our work, our life taking over, and it's the work one. Perhaps it feels a bit like this sometimes, yeah? Work, 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 it's a bit like ivy. It just creeps into our life, gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it takes over. And it might do it in a messy fashion like that, or it might do it in this way. It's organized, but it still just does our head in. It's too much. It just gets to us. Sometimes it's by choice. More often than not, it isn't. And this next slide, I think, reminds us of some of the floods last year. It wasn't by choice that a lot of people were having to work long, long hours and work to just get back onto anything like an even footing. Work comes at a cost. But we tend to accept it. And I don't know many of you very well at all, but just have a think. Do we accept sometimes our busyness as being okay? Do we even boast of it? I'm really, really busy, working so hard. We apologize if we get caught resting or sleeping, and God forbid, playing. We apologize. Have you found yourself saying that? If you're reading a book at home that's not a workbook, do you feel a bit guilty sometimes? It's daft, isn't it? Have you ever said, I'm not asleep, I'm just resting my eyes? Yep, bet you have. We increasingly handle a string of urgent, must be done, got to do it now things, and we become driven, a bit like a hamster in a hamster wheel. Okay? I think that's quite a few of us. We just get on and do it, and we go, and we're a bit worried about slowing down, because when you slow down, there's always a danger you go right over the top, and it's stressful. We live in a culture that's so dominated by work, isn't it? What do you do is the question we get asked by strangers sometimes. What do you do? Our identity begins to hang on our jobs and our work. And if it's not paid employment, the activities that we do, the things we volunteer for, the clubs we belong to. But that can be problematical, particularly if we're unemployed, if we're off sick, if we're retired, if we're bringing up small children, if we're housebound. It gets harder to find the answer. And if you're stuck in a hospital ward, it's tough. So every week I'm working with people who are going through identity crises, because last week they were an engineer. This week they're a gallbladder in bed 4. And it's really, really hard to cope with that complete change of identity and circumstance. It is also an opportunity to work out what really matters and to discover who you are before God. But sometimes you've got to go through the tough bit first to find that opportunity. So day by day we get blown along or hurled along on our hamster wheel in this whirlwind of information overload, all the new technology that just keeps coming at us, the social media, the ever-expanding networks of people in complex relationships to us, all those people we've got to try and remember. It's exciting, but it's actually exhausting. And for those of us in paid employment, and many of you here, will feel the increasing demands made upon you to work harder, to work longer hours, to do more. And with mobile phones, emails, the distinction between work and home becomes a bit fuzzy, doesn't it? Because they can get hold of you at any time. Do you get worn out just thinking about it? And it's not just those of us that are in paid employment. It affects everybody. It affects our families. It affects our friends. Because whatever stage of life we're at, we get impacted by this busyness. I think there are increased pressures on us all. School children, college, university students. The pressure to do more, get higher grades, to get more on their CVs, to work harder. Parents bringing up young children, pressure on you to be bionic almost, yeah? To do this, do that, get it right, read all the most recent research. It's hard. Financial pressures, fitting in stuff at home, the cleaning, the repairs, running around after grandchildren, looking after aging parents, being on this or that committee. Spinning plates comes to mind. Are you spinning lots of plates, just wondering which one's going to be the first to fall? Is this the abundant life that Jesus spoke about? Just have a think on that. And then there's church. Yep, church, and it's brilliant. It's lovely. You want to be part of it. But it can become just something else to do. Church is wonderful, it's part of God's plan, but it makes demands on us. We want to serve. We want to be part of God's plan for growing his kingdom on earth. We see the need. We see the potential. We love sharing in worship with our brothers and sisters. We love doing things together. But it does feel like work sometimes, doesn't it? How are we going to juggle it all? What will get messed up because we're doing too much? Which plate that's spinning is going to drop? But we keep squeezing more and more things in because we hate to say no. Stop it, you're saying. Stop it. It's depressing. It's miserable. Shut up. But thank goodness, into this sort of swirl of busyness, through the letterbox pops an invitation, Okay, just imagine that coming through your letterbox on a Sunday morning, and you're going to pick it up and look at it. What does it say? And I'm going to ask the men here this morning to read this invitation for us. Can you read it out loud? Here it goes. Come to me. Thank you. Who's it from? Yep. Press the next button on the slide and it will just prove it. Okay. And it's from Jesus and it's got kisses on the end. It's actually sent in love because he knows, he sees, he understands what our lives are like. And we've all got very different lives, but God knows. And that's the invitation he sends. Come to me and I'll give you rest. That's what we're going to look at. We're just going to stop for a few moments to say, what is it then? What is it, this rest that Jesus is offering to us? So, I'm going to move on and I'm going to say the first thing this is, it's a gift. Okay, rest is a gift. And we're reminded of this in Exodus chapter 33, when Moses is being instructed to leave Sinai, to move into something new, to change his life a bit. And the Lord said this to him. The Lord said, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. And that rest is a gift that will equip us for all that God will ask of us. Just check you've got that. God will equip us for what we've got to do by giving us rest. He doesn't say, do this, do that, do the other and then have a rest. He says, I'll give you rest to equip you for what I will then ask you to do. Sometimes we actually refuse that gift. We say, actually, God, don't worry. I can do it. I can manage. I can do it now. But if we do, we miss out. We miss out and may find, actually, we're not equipped for the work he's asking us to do. So rest is a gift. That's the first thing. Secondly, it's part of the ordained natural rhythm of life, as we see in the seasons around us. We're moving into summer. We've then got the autumn. We see the rest in the winter for the land. In the Genesis 1 story, the seventh day is hallowed. It's holy, a holy day of rest. On the seventh day, God rested. And people, in that story, in that narrative account, people were created on the sixth day. So what's the first thing they did? They rested with their creator. They were created and then they were rested. And that imagery somehow stresses the importance that rest really matters. It's not an option, but it's an imperative if we're to be fully human. And rest wasn't just for the people. It was for the land and for the animals as well. If you are in a hot country and you see people with their flocks, their goats, their cows, their sheep, in the midday sun, they take their animals to find shelter, to find shade. They will take them somewhere to rest them. Can I ask the women in the church to read these lovely verses from Psalm 23? Read them for us. The Lord is my shepherd. Beautiful words, aren't they? And they're timeless. Do we let the Lord lead us into those quiet places? Do we feel that we have opportunity to sit beside the quiet waters and be refreshed? Or are we just too busy? Do we say, Lord, later? I will, but I'll do it later. When I finish this, when I finish that. But God invites us to rest because it's refreshment. It's refreshment to get us ready for the rest of the journey. So it's a gift. It's ordained and natural. Next one, it's a place, actually, it's a place where we find God. Lovely old hymn, I heard the voice of Jesus say, come unto me and rest. Lay down, thou weary one, lay down thy head upon my breast. I came to Jesus as I was, weary, worn, sad. I found in him my resting place, and he has made me glad. So rest is a place where we find God. We find in him a resting place. It's a state of mind where we acknowledge our dependency upon God. And that lovely hymn that we just sang, being held in the Father's embrace, just feeling his gaze upon us, that's where he says, come to. He says, come to that resting place. Let me hold you. Some words from the Psalms that underline this. Psalm 46, be still and know that I am God. We've got to be still to feel that. Psalm 91, the person who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. That's where we're invited to come to rest in the cool of his shadow. Get out of the heat for a bit. And Moses understood the privilege of this remarkable invitation to come as we are to God, a God who knows it all. And this is a new image to me. I hadn't sort of come across this one before. It's Moses commissioning the 12 tribes, okay? He's going to send them out to live independently, to set up their family groups, to get on with their lives. He gives them instructions one by one. And this is the instruction to the tribe of Benjamin. Have a look at these words. It says this, let the beloved of the Lord rest secure in him, for he shields him all day long, and the one the Lord loves rests between his shoulders. And try and just conjure up an image for that last line. The one the Lord loves rests between his shoulders. And as I pondered that, the image that came into my head was seeing my son-in-law, John, going up a really steep hill with little Sammy on his back. And he was carrying Sammy on his back because Sam's legs were worn out. And Sam had put his head in between his dad's shoulder blades and had gone to sleep. So he weighed an absolute ton. But his dad wasn't going to put him down. He carried on walking up the hill. And Sam would have felt the heat of his dad's back. He would have felt the rhythm of him walking. And it sent him to sleep. And I think God actually calls us to come to him and says, come on, I'll pick you up for a bit. Just rest. Rest secure. I'll keep you safe. And we'll move forward together. So just hold that image. Next slide. It's something, rest is, something that Jesus saw as necessary. Shall we read this next passage together from Mark chapter 6? The apostles gathered round Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going, that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. And in other places in the Gospels, we see Jesus go off on his own for a rest. He goes off to pray. He goes off to sleep. And we catch a glimpse of his worn out head on a cushion in a boat with his eyes closed. Rest matters. So I'm pretty convinced by looking at the scripture that rest has to be a part of our story. At all points in our lives, whatever our age is, whatever's happening to us. And if we neglect it, if we allow rest to become a too tiny a wedge in that pie chart of our lives, we're going to miss out on things. So, what's it going to look like for us? And the first thing I want to say is it's going to be different for us all. Okay, there's not a package that you can say this is how Christians should rest. It doesn't work like that, does it? We're all different. We all have different needs. We all live in different circumstances. We've got to find what is God saying to us? What do we need to do to ensure that we've got enough rest programmed into our busy lives? First thing that I think has got to be an ingredient for everybody is this first one, sleep. So obvious, isn't it? Sleep matters. Sleep is important because it's healing. It heals our bodies, it heals our minds. It charges the batteries. And sleep patterns change with time, don't they? What a little baby needs is very different to what an active child needs, which is different to a teenager, which is different to a people middle-aged, different to somebody in their latter years. But ask yourself the question, are you getting enough? Are you getting enough sleep? Sometimes we're not, and we shrug it off as not actually mattering too much. We'll manage. We'll cope. But it actually impacts how we live, and it impacts how we react to other people. It impacts how we think. And if you're struggling with sleep, don't just say, I'll manage. Talk to somebody. Talk to somebody about it. Get others to pray with you about it. If you need to be, go and talk to your doctor about it. Because sleep really, really matters. Never apologise for being asleep. Unless it's in the middle of a big meeting and you've got your head on the table and everyone's scowling at you. But generally, sleep is necessary and it's a gift. So sleep lots. One little thought, I'm just going to throw this out. As I was preparing, it was just a thought that came into my head. I think there are some of you who are struggling getting enough sleep because you're filling your head with things on a screen. And whether it's a computer screen, a television screen, an iPhone, and you may be filling your head with lovely, lovely things. So I'm not saying they're bad things, they're good things. But it might be that the hours that perhaps you might need to be sleeping, your brain is being busy and active looking at a screen. Just somewhere, just ask yourself, are you doing that a little bit too much? Do you need to pull back to give yourself permission to get some good sleep? Sleep was the first one. Next one. What I would call quiet rest, breaking the pattern of busy days, busy times, doing things. Slowing down, positively choosing to change the pace, to step out of all the distraction stuff that comes at us, and actually, sometimes, do nothing. Do you give yourself permission to do nothing? Just watch the world go by, to watch the clouds, to people watch. To enjoy the moment, to be still, to be rooted and grounded in the moment, to pull up a chair and just sit in it, even for prayer, to say, I'm sitting in one chair, God's sitting in the other, we're not going to say anything, we're just going to be quiet together. Do you let yourself just stop with this quiet rest? Do you run a bath and just soak in it until you go wrinkly? We're allowed to stop. Second thing, active rest. This is doing the things that rest us, not by sitting around doing nothing, but by activities that actually energize us and refresh us. Things that relax us. It might be going for a walk. It might be listening to music. It might be painting. I don't know what you do. It might be pottering in the garden. It might be going for a swim. But it's only rest if it's not driven. If there's no must or ought about it. If it's, I've got to swim 36 lengths. It's not restful. If it's a potter up and down enjoying the water, it is. If you've got to finish the lawn and plant 500 bulbs by such and such a time, it's not restful. Watch the daisies grow. That you can be busy doing things and resting at the same time. And that's where books and films and things on a screen can be brilliantly restful. But watch it doesn't erode our sleep. And you know, the more we rest, the more we find ourselves a little bit closer to God. Rested, we're more likely to hear the whisper, feel the presence, recognize the touch. And in the stillness, we can notice the shadow of his hand over us or breathe in the warmth of his love as we nestle between his shoulders. We need to listen for ourselves when we get that invitation. What's God saying to us as individuals? And only you know that. What's God saying to you about rest? but also listen on behalf of your church. What's God perhaps saying to your church about rest? I think you have some people that you can learn from within your church community here, because I think learning to rest is sometimes cultivated as we get older. And it's important that we never despise enforced rest, but to embrace it, because it's only for a time. Some of the older people within our church communities sometimes feel cross that they can't do all the stuff they used to do. They've got to slow down a bit. Embrace it, be glad, and say, actually, I can do things a bit differently. In the church we used to live in Shrewsbury and live and work in, some of the key people in our church were in their 80s and 90s, particularly three elderly ladies, Wynne, Joyce and Eva. They were the pillars of our church because they prayed. When we first got there, they used to come to church and they were always on the front row. They always encouraged you, but they always prayed. As they got older, they couldn't come to church anymore, but they met in each other's little bungalows and they prayed together. We knew what a difference it made. As they got older, they couldn't get to each other's bungalows, but they would sit in the window and pray because they could see each other from their windows. And those three women had the ability to rest, had the ability to slow down, but into that they put this commitment to prayer, and it made such a difference. In the hospital, I see lots of people being given enforced rest. Some of you may have been there and experienced it, when for whatever reason, you're off your feet, you're stuck in a bed, and you've been told, like it or not, you've got to stop. All the norms vanish, all the things you usually do, you can't do. And sometimes there's a bit of frustration, sometimes there's some anger, sometimes there's a bit of guilt, saying, I ought to be doing this, I shouldn't leave everything to people at home, I ought to be doing this, that or the other. But gradually people move into a state of acceptance. And when they get there, they can learn to live a bit differently, whether it's just for a few weeks or whether it may actually be for years, to learn to live in a slightly different way, slowing down, with limited movement, even loss of sight or loss of limbs. Because they start to see things in a new light. They appreciate more what really matters. I'm conscious of time, so we're going to move on, but just one little story to take away. If you forget everything else, hold this image. I won't tell you her name. We'll call her Mary. Mary came to us pretty poorly. She was needing to be in bed all the time. She had limited movement. And over just a short number of weeks, she lost all the movement in her legs. She lost all the movement in her arms except for two fingers. She lost the power of speech, and her eyesight was starting to fail. It's awful, isn't it? It's just frightening. But she was given a little machine that enabled her with her two fingers to be able to type, so she could type words, press a button, and then a voice would say what she wanted to say. And she was an amazing character, incredibly positive considering what she was going through. And she would mess around. You could change the voices on the machine. So sometimes she would put in a really deep man's voice so that when she pressed the button, this big man's voice would come out. And she was in a bay with five people. And they were getting on well. There was obviously some nice relationships, encouraging each other. But on one occasion I went in, and as I approached her, I gave her a wave and said, Mary, how are you doing today? Or something like that. And she goes, tap, 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 tap. And you could see all the other people on the ward waiting. They're listening to the tapping. It was quite a long set of taps, so they were all anticipating what she was going to say. She presses the button, and they're all listening. You have to pretend in hospital that you're private, in your little space. But it's not true, is it? It's a complete lie. Everybody hears everything else that happens, to the minutest detail, but you pretend you can't. They're all listening. Tap, 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 tap. She presses the button, And this is what her voice, that's not her voice, says really loud so everybody hears. She said, "I'm safe in the Father's arms." I was speechless. It's not often I'm speechless, but I was gobsmacked. What can you say? Isn't that amazing to be living with all of that, stuck in hospital for weeks? But where she was safe in the Father's arms. Do we feel that in our lives? Do we feel we can go to him and just rest in his arms, whatever's going on? So yes, we'll find God as we work, as we serve, as we grow his kingdom. But there is this other dimension too, when we're still and just being and actually not doing. For there we discover that we are loved for who we are. Okay, we're loved for who we are, not for what we do. Okay, believe it. God loves you for who you are, not for what you do. And just finally there, the rest is supposed to actually come before work to prepare us to serve. We don't serve, get worn out, and then say, "I need a rest." God says, "Come to me, rest, and then I'm going to send you out." And if we discover this early in our lives, we've got it, whatever life may throw at us. We can find this rest in all our changes of life, in the highs and lows, the ups and downs, in the pain and in the loss, in the thrill and in the surprises, until finally we can say with the writer of Isaiah these words, "Those who walk uprightly enter into peace, and they will find rest as they lie in death." That will be a wonderful rest, not of doing nothing, but a rest with God face to face. So I'm going to invite the musicians to come back up. We're going to move into our final song. And I'm going to ask if you can make this song a prayer. It's "All Who Are Thirsty." And if you can use these words to just sort of connect with what God may have been saying to you in any way. What's God saying to you about your pattern of life? Have you got enough rest in it? What does he want you to do in response to what we're doing? And as we sing the words, "Come, Lord Jesus, come," just allow him to touch you. So thank you.